I'm Jennifer Weingart, and I'm talking to Bill Curtis, who will be in South Bend on Thursday giving a lunch talk at Notre Dame, and for Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me at the Morris on Thursday night. Bill Curtis, thanks for taking the time.
Thanks, Jennifer. Nice to be here.
All right. So you've been in a lot of different roles over the years. What has been the most memorable?
Well, I think my journalistic years—they span 50, and they go back to 1966 when I came to Chicago with WBBM, CBS, and I was here for 4 years, and they were just exciting and the best place a reporter could be. We burned the city. We witnessed the assassinations, the Democratic National Convention. And the conspiracy trial, can you imagine packing all that into 4 years? And those were the first years that I hit the streets in Chicago and then went out to L.A. where I covered the Manson trial in Chicago, Speck, and it goes on and on. And then I retired in 1996. Retired is a crazy word. Because I started my own production company, and we produced 600 documentaries for A&E Cable in the series that lasted 100, 150 shows, investigative reports, cold case files, American Justice I hosted. It's been quite a year. And then, of course, I get to top it all off with Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and slip into a more humorous kind of role. I say, just for fun. So that sums up my career pretty fast.
Well, it's been quite a career. And you say you retired back in the 90s, and you don't seem to be retired. You seem to still be doing quite a lot.
I find that retirement, if it means not doing anything and waiting for the paper so you can read it, and fill some of the time, and playing golf. I don't play golf anyway, but I find that I'm unhappy in that void. So I want to keep working in my profession, broadcasting, as long as I possibly can. Yes, and so I enjoy doing both Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me and Decades, which is an hour every day. Hard to believe we have done 600 of these documentaries, a day in history, if you will, over 3 years for a digital channel. And it's probably ahead of its time, but time will catch up with us.
My mom loves Decades. She watches it almost every day.
I'm glad. She must be. Well, she's younger than I am, I'm sure.
Yeah, I would say. Just a few years ago now, you took over for Carl Castle for Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. What's it been like filling his shoes? You obviously have some pretty big shoes of your own.
Yes, people loved Carl. He was 30 years himself with NPR, had a wonderful reputation. I feel bonded because we're both news people, and we have gotten together, and immediately, you talk on the same level. It's like two dentists getting together, or two doctors, the vernacular. And I feel very, very warm when I think about him and think back on how lucky I was to indeed first temporarily fill in and then have them ask me to fill his shoes.
And it used to be that the winners on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me would get Carl's voice on their voicemail, and now they've opened it up to anyone on the show. Have you been asked to record anyone's voicemail yet?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I'm going to go in right after your interview and do some voiceovers and voice mail. So it's fun. It's part of the fun of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Is it ever awkward recording people's voicemail? Do they get to ask you or tell you what to say, or how does that work?
Well, they've won something. And it would be only awkward if I was saying something that had profanity in it, although I enjoy profanity, or something that wasn't true. But, for instance, there are a couple of voicemails that they've written out, and they are in limerick form. So that, you know, really appeals to me. No, up to now, it hasn't been a problem.
I am very intrigued by people writing their voicemails in limericks. That sounds amazing. Maybe I should try that.
It's terrific. Let me try to pull something up, and if you, I'll try and get it. Maybe I can here. You know how difficult it is trying to talk and find something on your computer. Why don't you ask me something else while I look?
Sure. I wanted to ask you, you're going to be at Notre Dame for a lunch talk on Thursday. What should people coming to that expect?
A review of my career. That's what they've asked me to do. I'll bring some clips, show the big stories that I've been involved in, perhaps have broken the Agent Orange story, a PBS series called New Explorers, a science show we did 100 shows on, the King Riots, as I mentioned, Speck and Manson, and then I'll try to intersperse in between reflections on how it's changed from the days when I started to modern media. I'm looking forward to it myself. Want to hear one of those voicemails?
Absolutely.
Okay. This is in the, the limerick style. Perhaps she's out hiking something steep. I'm sorry. Perhaps she's out hiking something steep or karaokeing a verse of Creep. Or perhaps she is baking a walk with her dog she is taking. Anyway, leave your message at the beep. Clever, isn't it?
That is clever.
Very, very clever. And then somebody wanted me to read a piece from Mockingbird. And here's one more. So, you've called Colleen up on the phone. Why, she won't answer. That is unknown. I'm Bill Curtis. Now that you've heard this, please leave a message after the tone.
That one's great, too. People get so much more creative than I ever have been.
Well, you don't know when they're going to get creative like that. I like that.
Yeah.
So you start thinking.
Yes. I'll have to get more creative, I guess.
That's right.
So you mentioned for your talk at Notre Dame, you're going to be talking about how the news business has changed. And I was going to ask, you've been in Chicago in particular for quite a long time. How has the city and covering the news of the city changed in the time you've been there?
A lot of it follows the technological advances. We introduced, probably in 1973, the electronic news gathering, the Minicam. And now it's standard. But now they can be, and we had to pull cable all the way up to the fifth floor of City Hall, connected with his umbilical cord. Today you can go live from the expressway. So when we talk about getting a traffic report, there's the traffic as the station's car goes rolling down the highway. So that's a big advance. You can do the same now by hooking up to a television line. I mean, on your internet, almost from any place in the world. I'm doing some business in China. We routinely get pictures from China on WeChat, a Chinese service. That's just remarkable. So it means that your deadline has shrunken from a week during World War II, when Charles Collingwood and Edward R. Murrow were able to think about, and analyze and interpret the events of Hitler marching into Sudetenland, or Korea, much the same thing, when you still had to fly your film back to the United States to get it on the air, or even Vietnam. Vietnam never had a satellite dish, during the war. So they had to, get the firefights, put it on, maybe even charter your own 707, fly it to Tokyo, not Bangkok, but all the way to Tokyo, have it edited there, put it on the coaxial cable, or fly it to San Francisco, where they can then send it back to New York in the Walter Cronkite show. So that sounds so cumbersome today. You could do that, though, in 24 hours. So I kind of joined during that period. And, you had to worry about things like developing your film. That could go wrong. Editing your film, which took at least a minimum of 45 minutes. Okay, that's the old stuff. Today, you can do it on your laptop. And if worse comes to worse, you could actually beam it in using your iPhone. So that has given us this instant kind of thing. Now, what that means is that it's more difficult. It's easier, let's say, to transmit the content than it is to gather the content. What are you going to say? What is happening if you have no time, if you're just getting that picture back? So you have to be good. And very often you have to have a producer who is the real reporter going out and talking to people while you are standing in front of a camera. I think specifically of CNN, but everybody operates like this. Where will it go? Well, then we talk about moving to its own digital news cable channel and ultimately coming across the television or the computer. If you want to go to home theater, boom, you flip a switch, and there it is on the big screen. Or you can watch it on your iPhone, not far off. So those are technological advances, and hopefully the journalism schools are teaching the gathering of the news story itself. That hasn't changed. You still have to get out there, hit the pavement, talk to people, and judge between you what you think is true, realize how you're going to source your information so that it's accurate. It's a big change, big change.
Do you think with everything moving so much more quickly now and getting news stories back that maybe we should be slowing down and thinking more about the news that we're presenting to the public?
I do, but if you do look at what is available, I think we, in many cases, have. First of all, if you just want a headline, you tune in AM radio, and you squeeze the world's events down to 5 minutes. Very little do you get in addition to that. If you want more than that, go to your iPhone. If you want more than that, go to a blog. Want more than that? You can find it somewhere. You could actually tap in to a Korean newspaper if it were written in English and get additional information. So somebody could actually make a career sitting in front of the computer and becoming acquainted with all the sources of information. As a matter of fact, one could argue that we have too much information coming in. And I say, well, you may have too much then, but you don't have to read it all. The world, you are correct, is spinning much faster than it did back when I was starting out and you were forced to take time. And that's one of the reasons that I came back to Chicago to devote some time to documentaries. They're longer. You can tell the full story. And you don't... when I was working for the network, we were squeezing, let's say, the Angela Davis trial down to a minute and a half, 4 weeks of prosecution material. That's pretty tough. You're choosing words to represent sentences and weeks of information. Now, you don't have to do that if you can dump it onto a digital network. CBS is getting ready to do that with a digital network called CBSN, number one, CBSN. And that's where the news division seems to be heading. Anyway. Are you still with me?
I am still with you, yes. I was thinking about where I wanted to go next. You gave me a lot of things to think about there.
I'm sorry.
No, don't be sorry at all. Besides the news, you also own a ranch, from what I've read, and a beef company?
I do. A grass-fed beef company. Nutritious. It has no antibiotics, no hormones, no grain for the grass-fed animals. And it's been, frankly, a difficult time. When I started Curtis Productions, my production company, I thought I was the king entrepreneur, and I really got a kick out of it. We had success. We are now doing American Greed for CNBC, and we've been going for 25 years. So I said, well, I'm an entrepreneur. I'll just start a company and raise some cattle and do it the right way, and then I'll distribute and sell them to Jewel and Mariano's in Chicago. Well, it didn't quite work out like that. You always tackle a problem that is beyond your reach or limit. And so after 10 or 12 years, why, still hadn't made a profit. But we did kind of saturate the market with a knowledge of what grass-fed beef is. And ultimately, we kind of lucked out and found a route to China. Sounds like the old explorers. And China may open up as our savior, but also as the great market for the world. Pretty amazing.
Yeah. What's been the biggest challenge of your career?
Oh, it's a good question. I think it's keeping a balance of personal and professional life. It's something everybody faces, especially women who biologically are driven to have children and yet want to keep their other foot into a professional career. So you choose what you can do at home and then get that nanny and go back to work. And, you know, they're the smartest and most educated entities we have. So there's otherwise why it would seem to be a waste, all the knowledge. But, you know, you're called on to travel a lot. That's stress on the family, stress on raising children. So you're torn most of your life between, did I spend enough time with my kids and my family? And was it because I was too selfish thinking about my own career? Or should I have stopped somewhere along the way and allowed my wife to pursue her career and let me raise children? That sounds like a funny challenge, but ultimately one has to face that if they're get old enough, I guess.
Do you think you struck the right balance?
I don't know. You know, I had a lot of success with in my professional career and some bad luck. My wife, first wife, died when she was 37 of breast cancer. My son died at roughly the same age. He was schizophrenic. So I've known the heights and the depths. And that is its own kind of balance. And it kind of left me wondering whether I did. Could I have done more if I had given up a little of my career?
What's next for you? Are you going to continue with the things that you're working on, or do you have something new that you're looking at?
I'm intrigued by radio. I've done television, I've done the documentaries that I wanted to do, and all the series and PBS and travel and things like that, and I still enjoy them, and maybe I can do them sort of, we call them one-offs. But radio, first of all, needs something, because they're not making any money. People aren't listening to it. Everything seems to be switching over to the iPhone. And I like it as a venue because it's much easier than television. Television, you have to have pictures. And with radio, you just write and speak. And I like writing. So watch for me on the dial. Right there with you, Jennifer.
All right. No podcasting for you, though?
Yeah. I'm trying to find the right idea. There's a lot of material there. There will be a lot more. If you try to tune in for A&E's Cold Case Files, you'll find some of my old work in those stories. And if you have a good idea, call me.
I'll keep that in mind. One other thing about your talk at Notre Dame, I've been told that you sent ahead a banner.
I did.
What's the banner about?
Well, you'll give away my secret, but I believe that one of the answers to climate change and global warming is to utilize the prairie and wild plants. It's all around us, or was. There's less than 0.1% of native prairie that's left in Indiana and Kansas and Illinois and points west. But the photosynthetic process of plants absorbing or taking in carbon dioxide, using a lot of it to run the plant above the surface, and then storing the rest down in a root system that the banner will show goes 10 and 15 feet into the earth. That makes our sod, but it also supports organisms that in one teaspoon, let's say a tablespoon, can be a billion little organisms, all, and that's with a B, all who eat carbon and are supported by carbon. So the prairie becomes the number two sink or repository for carbon dioxide in the world, the number one being the ocean. And we are not utilizing it at all. It's very difficult to measure how much the soil is playing a role like that, but my guess is more than a guess, it's what science is telling us, it's an awful lot. And if the grasslands of the world were properly maintained, and you can do that with cattle, then you have a good solution to climate change. I have some acreage north of Chicago where we will be experimenting with the Chicago Botanic Garden with a wild wheat seed, wheatgrass. I say wild because it's planted with no-till. It is a perennial plant. It has the depth in its roots of a native prairie plant, not an annual wheat that is planted every year and digs up the earth with plowing and then takes 150 gallons of ammonium nitrate fertilizer for every acre. That's what's killing our soil. The plowing is allowing the soil to blow away. So the Holy Grail is this plant that adds value to a prairie. The weeds are there. There's no plowing, so you save the topsoil. And that is my contribution to the students of Notre Dame to start the businesses and try to help this proliferate. It was developed by the Land Institute in Salina, Kansas, and we're going to try it out in this cold temperature.
Okay. A banner about grass.
Tall grass. That's right.
All right.
And And I'm sure you have an awful lot of that prairie grass around Elkhart.
Some, yeah. I would probably. There's quite a lot of farms around.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you're a pleasure to talk to.
It's a pleasure to talk to you, too. Is there anything that I didn't ask you about that you wanna add?
Oh, I can't. I think your listeners probably couldn't take it, couldn't stand it. We've covered a lot of ground.
Yes, we have. They'll just have to come to Notre Dame on Thursday and hear for themselves.
Yes, they will. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Okay. Right. Bye-bye.
Bye.